Hi, I'm Christian. In 2011, I was forced into rehab because I couldn't stop using drugs, alcohol, and sex to cope with my spiritual, emotional, and mental issues. Today, I'm the host of The Most High Show, where we address personal issues of identity, faith, and belonging, leveraging the power of Me Too through guest interviews on personal topics. Over the past 3 years, a growing awareness has begun to form in Atlanta of an area that has become known as the Triangle. It begins in downtown Atlanta, and this region extends northward, covering a demographically and economically diverse swath of Atlanta's population. The Triangle is notable not because of its diversity or its size, but because it's seen a 4,000% increase in heroin and opiate-related deaths since 2015, particularly among the young and disadvantaged. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution has referred to heroin use inside the Triangle as in a crisis stage, an epidemic. Justice.gov has described heroin use inside this area as exploding. Stated clearly, heroin usage has reached crisis levels inside the Triangle, primarily affecting those without access to care and the resources needed to combat and overcome this life-destroying addiction. This is why we got with One Step Recovery. We went and met with them a little over a month ago to really find out about their program and really their approach to recovery. What we found were people who have survived addiction, who are experiencing recovery, giving back. The place is not glamorous, but it is a fresh start for many people who have no other options. The founder of One Step has her own story of addiction, and it's clear in the way that she has set up and runs her program that she really is concerned and focused on helping people restore their lives. It's this kind of grassroots, frontline, in the trenches recovery program. It is programs like this that are doing the hard work. Here's their story.
Good?
Yeah, good.
You're good there? We're good here? Audio's good? All right.
It's a lot to put together.
So let's start with, we'll start over here with your name and what it is you do here.
Now? My name's Annette Attaway, and I am the founder and director of One Step at a Time Recovery.
And I'm Norman Gaffney. I'm the assistant director for One Step at a Time Recovery.
I'm Dakota Moeller. I am client relations and legal representative for One Step at a Time Recovery.
Nice. How long have you guys been doing this?
I've been doing this one for going on 5 years. I've been in this field for 8.
Yeah. What brought you into the field?
I'm a recovering addict and alcoholic myself, and started working at the first program I ever went through. Found my passion and decided I wanted to continue to help others get their life together the way I got mine.
So how do you guys describe your program to people when they call and ask for help?
So one big thing that I think sets us apart from a lot of different programs, when you get out of prison or you come straight from the street, options are kind of limited. What the next thing to do with your life is limited. You don't know what to do. You're pretty much a newborn baby, just put on the street or back into society. So how do you take the next step to try and stay sober? So here we give you the fundamental building blocks to be able to learn how to get a job, keep accountable for your own actions, how do you pay your bills, keep you responsible, and how to be a functioning member of society and deal with your addiction at the same time.
So you're working with people that are coming out of either prison or really tough situations.
We take them from detoxes, prisons, jails, street.
Yeah.
And you know, they're all come in different levels. Some come in with help, some come in with absolutely nothing. And you know, we have to go through the whole process of getting their basic needs met first, their food, their clothing,
IDs.
Their IDs, and then from there, you know, it's first getting them grounded and set in recovery. And, you know, we have a van that takes them to day labor to help them become accountable. And then they find full-time jobs and transition up from there. That's why the program is broke down into phases. Mm-hmm. A little structure, more structure for the first phase. And as you go in time, it gets a little less structured and teaches you how to live life on life's terms without using drugs and alcohol.
Yeah. So how do you, how do you deal with people come in and they're coming from the street or coming from prison? Most of them don't have anything. I mean, they don't have much money, they don't got support. What do you guys do in that situation?
We love them first.
Yeah.
we take them and we do the best we can. We have some clothes that's been like donated from other places. Mm-hmm. So we always try to keep a food pantry here. It's not, it's not a whole lot, but it's to get them by. But I will say the one beautiful thing about the clientele here, the family here, is nobody goes hungry. Mm-hmm. Everybody reaches out to the newcomer. Mm-hmm. We send them to food banks, we send them to clothing banks, and help them acquire the things that they need.
Yeah. I mean, that was one thing that like struck me when I came was, it felt, just sitting and talking with these guys, you weren't here, but it was, it felt very genuine, it felt very down to earth. It felt very much like what the 12-step is, which is reaching back and, mm-hmm. and helping, and I thought that was good. That was beautiful, actually, that was the case here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very family-oriented. If you go into some of our men apartments and you go check them out at night,
yeah.
like, they're cooking together. They're all talking to each other. It's your home away from home for a short period of time. They take to that. They try to give and help and give back, and that's one of the we have four different phases in our program, and part of that is giving back.
Service.
Can't keep it unless you give it away.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And that is one of the biggest things that I wanted the aura of this place to be, was family oriented, because a lot of times we come in, we have family, but we've hurt our family.
Right.
Our family, has turned our back on us for our own actions. And this is a whole new family that can embrace, because we've been where you're at.
Right.
And we understand. So we can embrace you in a way that your maternal family can't embrace you right now.
Right.
And it's a big thing for me to feel like you are cared for and loved here. As long as you can take the structure out along with the love, because there is some days when the tough love is what you need more than the heartfelt love. So
right.
I gotta give it both ways.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
As it was given to me.
Right. So. Yeah, exactly. I recently was working with someone who, and I wonder if this is true for you guys, your experience, is like when people come to the program, they may not be in a place to be completely honest yet, but maybe they're just in a place to be willing,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, is that kind of like, what do you feel like is the fundamental requirement? I mean, we know what the 12 steps say, but I mean, in your experience, when someone comes, it's like you can tell, okay, this is 30 days out before he starts getting it, I mean, what are some of the signs? And
for me, the more beaten up, the more willing.
Right.
Without the willingness, like you say, the honesty can come later, because you might be honest about one thing, but you really don't know anything about honesty till you realize you got a problem. And that comes, doesn't always come with just saying, I'm an addict and alcoholic. That comes through the steps. But does the willingness to do whatever it takes to change your life,
right.
is to me the big fundamental that's gonna get you through and get you maintain your sobriety.
A lot of me is you gotta walk before you can crawl type
mm-hmm.
situation. Me coming in here, I was beaten, broken, had nothing left. I didn't know that I wasn't being completely honest with myself, nonetheless, to be honest with anybody
right.
else.
Right.
I was, an addict mind. I literally was unaccepted of what was going on in my life and really didn't want to look at it for what it was. So it got to the point where I had to be honest, and I didn't have a choice. And working with a sponsor and having people keep you accountable for your actions and just kind of say, hey, you can't BS a BSer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm that person too. We all are. Kind of helps us in our what we do. You can't fool us for the most part. For the most part.
Well, the thing for me is I don't know. If someone would have looked at me 10 years ago, their thought process was, she's never going to be anybody. So I try not to do that today. I don't know who walks through that door is not going to make the major change in their life.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's not for me to say, it's for me to give the opportunity, and it's for them to do the work.
Right. That's key. I mean, that's like,
that's key. It's like creating the space, mm-hmm. right, for the healing and the recovery mm-hmm. to begin, right? Yeah, and that's like, they don't get that space, or they've burned up all that space with their mm-hmm. family and their loved mm-hmm. ones, and so you got to come to a place like this to mm-hmm. to get it. So, to give that space to someone who's in recovery, when you know what they need to do, but you're trying to give them that space, I mean, how hard is that? What do you guys do in that situation?
You mean give them the room to grow up?
Yeah.
It takes some patience sometimes, but also I have to go back and remember, I didn't do it right the first time. You know, we don't come in here well. We're not well when we walk in that door. And as I was saying to someone today, you know, you've got to allow people to change. So we have a system. I believe in pen to paper.
Okay.
So when they violate certain rules or get self-centered and don't want to do things,
mm-hmm.
we sit down and I share my experience, strength, and hope, first of all, and tell them how this design helped me to get sober and how it can help them. And then we write it up on a pretty little sheet of paper, give them a pen and paper, let them do some essays and some soul searching.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, call your sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
That always helps. So no one's going to be perfect coming in here. It's just not going to happen, but it's beautiful to watch the change.
Yeah.
When it does happen.
Yeah. So you guys are primarily 12-step based?
We are 12-step based, but we hold to and take them to meetings for AA, NA, or C, which is 12-step based.
Okay, right.
We're just basically a structured, sober living environment that sets a set of guidelines and rules to help you get sober.
Yeah. You're being really quiet.
Yes.
They're doing great. they answer a lot better than I do. But I think, too, that part of that, with that willingness, you know, they would have to leave herself open for the open mind to, or the open-mindedness to where that they can take the suggestions that the staff and possibly the other clients who's been here longer and to take those and to take that to heart and hopefully practice that to where they do get that genuine humility, to where the honesty at that point, you know, will fall into place.
Yeah.
You know, because the honesty may come later.
Mm-hmm.
But Annette was saying the willingness is a major portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key that opens the door
mm-hmm.
for the sobriety.
Yeah.
And then with that, then the open-mindedness comes.
Yeah.
And once you get that open-mindedness to be able to take the suggestions, then they can look and start being honest, not only with themselves, you know, but with other people,
right?
As well,
and
that's a major portion
mm-hmm.
to the recovery.
Yeah,
as well.
I just want to say how real this is. We had the AC cranking, and I heard the AC cut off, and then we got action going on in the background. I mean, we're in the midst of it right now, as we're interviewing. So speaking of being in the midst of it, I mean, when are you off? How do you, and this is for all three of you, like, how do you say, okay, I need to not, for my own sake, not worry and think about these people I've been loving on all day, and what can you do? How do you guys do that?
No, that is a very good question, because that has taken me years. Years.
Yeah.
That would be, honestly, nights that I would lay awake and cry and worry about where they're at.
Mm.
And it took a whole nother program for me called Codependency
mm-hmm.
Anonymous to learn to set some boundaries and to realize that I can only do so much, that a person's recovery is really their responsibility.
Yeah.
So I've gotten a lot better at it. Now I just send texts that says, call the office. Because I'm the one that they call all the time. It doesn't matter. I know I have a code with my family here that if it's an emergency, type 911 and I'm going to call you. If you were trying, if it's something that affects your sobriety, I'm going to call you in an instant. But if it's something about a rule or a regulation, just call the office. So I've learned for me to set the boundaries, but it's taken a long time for me to do that. And them too.
Yeah.
They're working on it. They haven't done this quite as long as me.
Yeah.
But they're getting better.
So let me talk to me about what is the challenges and what
for me, I mean, and I'm a baby in recovery and working in recovery, that this is what I want to do. It's something I'm very passionate about. It's really hard for me.
It is.
It really is, yeah. I don't mean to cry. like, there's not, I live an hour away. There's days I have to pull over on the side of the road and just.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah. You care.
Yeah.
A lot of it's just you care.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's, that's me. That's, you know, you relate, you understand. So
right.
It's hard to. To separate. Annette helps me a lot with the separation. She's gotten to that point where she's able to, hey, boundaries, you know, there needs to be. But at the end of the day, it's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah. What about you?
And Nate, I am still trying to get boundaries set as far as that goes. I came into her program. About 6 years ago, and I decided I wanted to give back what I had, and with that, it was almost like, and she told me, you're not Superman, so you can't save the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been ran out, you know, of my office and ran out, you know, and say, don't answer your phone. It's your time off.
Or get out.
Yes.
Let me go home.
but it's, you know, and I think it's that passion that drives me, but I'm understanding too that too much of that passion, you know, can lead to other things.
So for you, it's like being the person that you needed when you were in addiction.
Being
right?
The person
right.
that I needed when I was in addiction. Yes.
Yeah, I think I found that true in my own recovery. Like, that's how, you know, I've always wished I had what I am to other people, you know, and I got a wife who's super supportive and has helped me through that. But then there's also, like, you know, there's so many people that don't recover.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, I know.
And it's hard to put, for me, it's hard to put my finger on why. You know, why did it take for me? But, you know, most of the guys that I was in rehab with, you know, have at some point relapsed. Some are still back in complete active addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always interesting, you know, because I can't really put my finger on it. I mean, I can say, well, you did this. Maybe you stopped going to meetings or you did these certain things. But it does seem like there's this moment of clarity, right? That's kind of outside of all of our hands,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of leading into, you know, the spiritual aspect of recovery, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you guys deal with that and create an environment where people can find that on their own?
As far as trying to find the spiritual experience?
Yeah, or some sort of... And not even an experience, but a spiritual identity, really, I think is what I'm getting at. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a tough one. But for me, you know, I remember hearing the words, first, you must conceive that you have a fatal disease that will kill you.
Right.
And I had to be convinced of that. But today, what I do is I share how God has worked in my life.
Right.
And with each and every person, you know, I had a conversation with a newcomer this morning. And it's, I let them know my struggles. And I hope that they see the change in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I always direct them to, you know, it's a spiritual program, not a religious program. So
right.
Everybody has their own God of their own understanding.
Right.
My higher power is God. Doesn't
right.
mean it has to be yours. But, and that's what I tried to lead them to that point of, you got to trust the process.
Right.
You, there is something greater than yourself. And I push them to, try to push them to that level of thinking,
mm-hmm.
Even if it's small things. I suggest a lot to just write your prayers. Write your thoughts.
Right.
It can be the doorknob that is your higher power. Write to that doorknob.
Mm-hmm.
Start building that, because for me, the God conscience that I've gotten today is my direct solidified to my sobriety.
Right.
And you know, that's really, it's being the example.
Yeah.
Because you can tell me anything, but if I don't see it happening,
mm-hmm.
where's the faith? Because I remember my faith was in other people.
Right.
I heard it and I didn't believe it and I didn't believe it and I didn't believe it. I thought they were all lying.
Yeah.
There's no way you've got 20 or 30 years sober. You just ain't got caught drinking yet. And I said that in my first AA meeting.
Yeah.
I did. Wow. And someone said, just keep coming back.
Yeah.
And I kept coming back and I kept watching these same people and watching life happen to them and mm-hmm. watching them stay sober, and I became to believe.
Yeah.
So that's how I hope to spread that message to them, is right. to just continue to do what I'm doing
mm-hmm.
and let them see that I'm not just talking. I've been through what they've been through.
Yeah.
And this is where my spirituality has gotten me.
Right.
Is over here, and that's the only way I know how to do it.
Yeah,
can't beat it into them.
It's huge for someone to just acknowledge that they're not in sovereign control of their life,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right? Like to have that revelation and go, wait a minute, I am not in complete mm-hmm. control.
Uh-huh.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there is, like, you know, especially in recovery, like, you know, what I've heard a Christian critique is say, well, you're identifying yourself as an addict, and that's not who you are, you're a new person. And what I've tried to explain, without a lot of luck, is it's like this remembrance. You know, it's twofold, right? It's one thing is to, you know, I got to remind myself
mm-hmm.
that I can't operate in certain situations like everybody else can
mm-hmm.
operate. And then secondly is that it's an example. When I stand up there, and I have my family, and I have my house, and I have my life, and I go, but I'm an addict,
mm-hmm.
and someone goes, wait a minute, I can have that
mm-hmm.
too,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's
mm-hmm.
it's really an attitude of humbleness,
mm-hmm.
but I think it gets misconstrued by a lot of people on their faith because they think, well,
you never gonna amount to nothing.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, so because what you're explaining is a very hard place to be, because again, it's this you modeling it,
mm-hmm.
you setting the environment and the room for people to acknowledge it, and then you got to watch them kind of go, you know. And with you guys being the staff, you don't have the gift of like what the sponsor would. Like, sponsor has clear lines drawn. They
mm-hmm.
say, hey, I can talk to you about this. You know, how do you guys deal with family and loved ones and all the and the court dates and all those messy things that come along with all this?
We just do it, honey.
Yeah.
There is no clear direction to that.
Yeah.
We just do it. We suit up, show up, and do what needs to be done.
I love that. That's really all that needs to happen, right?
That's it.
Yeah.
One day and one
step
at a time.
Yeah, because if we get into the how are we, or how, it's just, we just do it.
Yeah.
I mean,
I love that.
There's, thank God, I'm very grateful and fortunate that I have a good staff.
Yeah.
So there is more than one of us.
Yeah.
That is a wonderful thing. So
yeah.
We can be at a couple of places, but
uh-huh.
we just do. We just do. The families are hard sometimes.
Yeah.
Because they just don't understand. And I have to remember they're not going to understand
mm-hmm.
and not expect them to understand.
Right.
And really, truly, we keep our boundaries set with family real tight
mm-hmm.
Because the confidentiality of the client is the most important.
Yeah.
And if they don't want their family to know something, it's not my place to tell them, and I'm not going to. This
right.
is their place, and that will come in their recovery.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, we just do it, honey. We just do it.
The legal aspect, I've been through so much legal stuff myself, it just makes me really mad.
Yeah, she's good at that.
I've just been in so much trouble in my life. I know how the system works. I've been in and out of the system. My family's been in and out of the system. So it's just something I know. Pretty. I know what the probation officers want to hear. I know how it works.
Yeah.
You need help, I got you.
Yeah,
the insight's good.
My
yeah.
staff, each one of my staff members bring their own flair.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. You have like a street law degree.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
Is there any better kind, really?
No, right, exactly.
In our field, is there any better kind? Yeah,
especially right. When you've been in there so long, you start looking at the law books they have in there. How do I get out of, how do I get myself out of trouble? Right. How do I continue to keep doing what I want to do without right. getting in trouble? You know,
yeah,
you,
yeah.
The adigmas that you find other ways.
Yeah.
So, I have some questions here. I guess, how do you deal with mental illness? You accept clients who have mental illness.
Most all of us have some form of mental illness. It's called a dual diagnosis. However, we don't have counselors on duty, but we require that they maintain their mental health appointments and maintain their mental health medication. We are currently working with trying to get a couple of counselors, since now that we're nonprofit, mm-hmm. come in and do some pro bono counseling work and some group therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a process. You know, just getting nonprofit is a great thing, and I'm excited to see what other kind of benefits that we can get to help everyone. But yeah, it is a requirement. But yes, we do take them with mental illness, as long as it's not a mental illness that we can, that's going to harm them more to be in our environment than it would, you know.
Right.
We've only had a couple that we've had to say, I'm sorry, this isn't the place for you, because they needed more than we could give them. But mostly, you know, it's a dual diagnosis. You know, we all have some form of bipolar or some form of depression. It comes mm-hmm. with
yeah.
addiction.
Yeah.
We help people get, we set them up with Mercy Care, which is
yeah.
based out of Atlanta, help them get whatever kind of medicine or anything that they can possibly need. So that's kind of great for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So since you guys are a nonprofit, that means if someone, you know, hears this and they're like, you know, I like that, I want to support, I mean, they can donate
mm-hmm.
to help cover some of those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that would be a great thing.
Yeah.
We're always needing, you know, like I say, we have a lot that come in with absolutely nothing. We have come out of pocket to cover medicine,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
food, clothing, bed linen.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mind a bit. And now what I tell them is, when you get it together, you help a newcomer one day. That's mm-hmm. my motto. But yes, that would be a great thing if someone chose to do that. It would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Help someone through recovery and get what they need when they come
yeah.
in.
Yeah. I would say, you have another one?
How do you guys deal with if someone did relapse?
Unfortunately, we have to let them go for a period of time. I believe and I enforce a sober living environment. That doesn't mean that someone's not going to make a mistake. It means that they, you know, they have to leave. We ask them to go to detox, go get a medical clearance, go do whatever they need to do to get rid of that mental obsession before we bring them back. Because I'm a big philosopher of the domino effect. If you allow someone to stay
right.
in this environment
mm-hmm.
that
right.
is using or drinking, then you're going to have, it's going to affect everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's their personal choice. And sometimes it's what it takes for those. And, you know, some do and some don't. But that's what I do require, is they do have to leave and get
mm-hmm.
further help.
Yeah. Is there a certain amount of time, or you just kind of judge that?
No, it's, we have to have policies on this, or our hearts will get in the way.
Yeah.
So it is 48 hours for the first time.
Yeah.
Third time, it's 72 hours
no.
after the third time.
Second is 72, and
yeah.
then the third is 30 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really gracious, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and I see if it's three times within a 30 to 45 day period, this just isn't the place for you. You may need more.
Right.
So, but yeah. I try to give second
chances. With a medical
chances.
Clearance.
With a medical clearance, oh yes.
With things like heroin and alcohol.
Have to have detox.
That you
yeah.
can't necessarily put somebody right back and just say, okay, you're cut off now. Try to
right.
do this.
You, jump yeah. back in.
You need
right.
medical help for that. And since we don't have a medical doctor here, we don't want to take that risk of their lives or anybody else's
right.
lives being exposed to that as well.
Right.
So yes, that has to happen.
Yeah, yeah, I've been, I read somewhere something about the effects of, you know, the having the environment and where people relapse in rehab or in sober living, and then them having to leave, that, you know, a lot of cases it does more harm, right? But you have to keep the culture and the
mm-hmm.
community. You have to think of that, right? So if you have someone, if you got, it's like, how else do you deal with it? And it sounds like what you guys have is a very gracious, like, you know, if someone has messed up and then they get the 48 hours, I mean, and they really want it, I mean, that to me, that's a good...
They'll make it back. If they don't, right, they'll stay out there. That's
right.
Exactly.
That's it, yeah.
We've had some that, I mean, you get discharged, you have nowhere else to go. You sleep under a bridge for 48 hours. Find some new energy.
It's called a consequence.
Yeah.
Because
right,
for addicts and alcoholics, if you do not have a consequence to your actions, I mean, we don't play God. It's not us to give you the consequences,
mm-hmm,
but
yeah,
you know, you got to have some.
Yeah.
Just patting them on the back and saying that's okay, going upstairs drunk, that's just not going to work.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And again, it's a poisoning environment if you do put something
right
back in that.
Yeah.
We do a pretty good job of. I mean, we don't spare any expense for drug tests frequently,
that's
randomly, often.
My biggest expense, actually.
Up and down.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of stay on top of. I mean, there's so many things out there now. Kratom, CBD oil. You have to. I mean, that's a mind altering substance. So not allowed here.
Right.
So how do you look for those things? How do you even know those things are there? We learn from the people coming in, you know, this is a new thing. I haven't been out there using in however long. I don't know about these new things. So you learn from the clients that too. And a lot of, luckily our clients are really good on like honesty.
Mm-hmm.
People that want to be here and they don't
we
care
have
about
a no secrets
yeah
policy as well.
No secrets policy. If you know someone's using
mm-hmm
or doing something they shouldn't be doing, that's a dischargeable offense because you did not speak up.
Yeah.
We have a lot of structure here. We do have a house check your walks every morning. We walk in the afternoons. We have house checks every night. We have seniors in every apartment,
mm-hmm,
which is a senior resident who's gotten some clean time,
yeah,
follows the rules, that kind
yeah
of like the house man that helps us be our eyes and ears when
right
we can't be there. So, and that helps keep that cut down a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But a majority of, one thing that we've always done is said to them, be transparent with us. So we've had a majority of ours we don't have to catch.
Mm-hmm.
They come and tell us.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah,
they
definitely
come and say,
yeah,
Annette, Dakota, woman, I made a mistake. This is what I did.
Well, that's
what I'm doing.
Creating a family environment.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a place of like, it's really difficult, a place of acceptance. You know, I accept you, I love you as you are. But then also, hey, if you've messed up, you're
mm-hmm
going to have to go through the process, you know.
And they already know. They already have their backpack for the come to the office.
Yeah.
some of them.
Yep.
Yeah.
And just be out. I'll see you in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we'll say,
mm-hmm,
okay, text us and let us know you're okay and where you're at. And they do. And they come back. And
it's important to let
yeah
them know that, you know, we still care. Just because you didn't relapse, it is what it is. You know, we're people. We're human. We make mistakes. However, you're welcome back. We understand. We've been there. We get it.
Right.
There's no point of that I don't get at all in my mind. Like, I completely understand. Done it before many times. Let me help you and let me show you that I can be here. And when you come back, we're here. Like, we're still here.
Some we have to add a little more stipulation to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
If we've seen, you know, if we've seen the level of freedom was a little much.
Yeah.
Like, if 30 days was a little, you know, they might need 45 days on a 6 p.m. curfew.
Mm-hmm.
They might need 90 meetings in 90 days instead of five. We evaluate it as a staff,
mm-hmm,
and then
yeah
speak with them and
yeah
sign on the dotted line, come
yeah
back in. This is what we think is going to help you.